Hello, I'm Caroline and welcome to the Lightning 50 e-commerce growth hacking podcast. Today we're speaking with Richard Skidmore. He's the head of marketing at Skate Hut. But before we get into the interview, a quick message from our sponsor. We have an exciting sponsor today, PeopleVox, the warehouse management system helping ambitious e-commerce businesses scale. If you have a growth mindset like lounge underwear, in the style, or Opoly, you know how important it is to have industry-leading fulfillment and customer experience. PeopleVox offers proven increases in accuracy and transparency across your warehouse, lightning-fast pick-and-pack methods based on industry best practice, and a proven track record partnering with some of the most successful brands of the e-commerce era. All with simple setup and user training. Exactly what you need to take control of your warehouse and wow your customers. With established integrations into Shopify, Brightpearl, Inventory Planner and more, just search PeopleVox and chat to their WMS experts today. And now on to the podcast. So Skate Hut was founded back in 2007 when the founder Mark was on holiday in the US and he saw Heelys everywhere. These shoes with a wheel in the back, which meant you can kind of roll around instead of skating. You might have remembered those from in the noughties, weren't really prolific in the UK. And he decided that there was definitely a business opportunity by bringing that back over with him to start a company. And Skate Hut was born. Now I'm speaking to Richard. Welcome, Richard. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. How are you doing today?
Hello, thank you. I'm doing very well. It's starting to get warmer outside as well, so yeah, I'm happy.
And your customers are happy to be getting on their wheels and skating about?
Definitely, absolutely, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and the business. You can perhaps maybe even give a better example of where Skate Hut is today versus where it was in 2007 when it was set up.
Yeah, well, I actually came on to Skate Hut September last year. So I'm fairly new to the business, but the benefit of working on the digital team is that I get to see history dating back to, you know, when they started with, you know, the likes of Google Analytics, so I can get a really good picture of how they've performed over the past few years. We've really kind of hit the ground running with Skate Hut. Back really a few years ago, I think from 2015, and we saw actually that was kind of the main growth area there for them. But I really, throughout 2020 and 2022, I think it was during the pandemic, we really saw kind of a natural growth there as well, where it's the sort of sales and the traffic really exploded. Obviously, you know, we had people, you know, who couldn't go on holiday anymore. They couldn't go down to the pub. They couldn't do the things they wanted to do. So they were looking at other activities they wanted to do. And Skate Hut really kind of fitted the bill. So they were kind of in the right place at the right time there. Skateboards and, you know, scooters and roller skates, even going into kind of the water categories as well, like bodyboarding and surfing as well, has also been looked at by Skate Hut. So it's been... The past couple of years has been a really good growth for them, I think. So it's been good to get on board at this stage as well.
Excellent. So you mentioned that 2015 was quite a peak period for growth in 2020. And you've explained, obviously, 2020, COVID, everyone wanted to get outside when they could. How has trading been since then? Have you seen the demand continue, or have you seen that tail off a little bit? How's that been working for you guys?
So going into this year, it has been quite difficult, obviously, because, you know, we started off the year with the energy prices going up, mortgage rates going up. So, you know, the cost of living went up quite a lot. So I think it's been quite difficult for a lot of retailers and a lot of e-commerce businesses during this time as well, especially at the start of the year. You know, we've really kind of had to adapt to that in a lot of ways. You know, there's been a lot of uncertainty, and I think it's quite difficult to compare seasonally year on year the sales, because it's just a different climate altogether.
So we're definitely not comparing apples and apples there, are we? So talk to me about how you're trying to kind of close that gap at the minute, and where are you focusing your efforts to get people interested in again?
Well, we had quite a heavy reliance on pay-per-click, you know, over the past few years. And what we've seen is that there's, you know, a large contribution from that channel into the digital sales. Obviously, you know, with pay-per-click, there is a cost to that. And, you know, you can only grow so much. You know, the market is only so big, and you can't make the market bigger yourself. You know, you can only really take a bigger share of that market. So it can be quite difficult. And I think when you can... use the channels, you can basically exhaust the channels to the point where you can't really grow anymore. You know, and I think if we look at the traditional channels for digital, you know, you've got your pay-per-click, you've got your organic search as well, you've got your referral, you've got your affiliates as well, you know, and obviously your direct. So it's kind of looking at those channels and seeing, okay, so how have we actually exhausted all of them? You know, and I think with pay-per-click, it was definitely kind of the case that, you know, we kind of get into the stage now where we've got a good, you know, majority of impression share on all of our main categories at the moment. So really, we need to be looking at, you know, year on year, pay-per-click is, you know, it's performing as well as, but the cost has sort of gone up on that. So yeah, we kind of need to pull back on the cost on pay-per-click. That's one aspect that we need to look at while maintaining the current level of sales. Mm-hmm. The other side is, well, if the contribution of PPC is going up, then the contribution from the other channels is probably going down. And those channels are, you know, they don't cost as much. So organic is obviously free. So there is a point there to say, well, how can we improve the sales coming through on organic search? And then there's a few various ways of doing that. And a lot of it is down to gap analysis, you know. And this is how I always start off with looking at kind of how we can improve any business. You know, it always starts with analytics. So you can empower yourself with the information to make the right decisions moving forward. So really, it was kind of looking at, okay, so with organic search, it has sort of, the contribution has sort of gone down year on year. How do we get it to go back up? How do we take more of that share going into, you know, the Google, you know, Google search? And we looked at the gap analysis, and we looked at essentially, you know, where we were seeing a lot of traffic coming through from paid search that we weren't necessarily seeing through organic search. So, okay, well, how do we look at those? Where are the rankings for those? You know, if there are some quick wins there, how can we, you know, optimize the content for those pages to push it up? So, you know, we're not just relying on paid search. We are getting, you know, a percentage of that traffic through organic search as well. So we've kind of been working a lot on that. I just really kind of doing a lot of housekeeping on the content on the pages themselves, because content, obviously, with SEO is still king. I feel there are other things, you know, link building is still essential as well. But for me, since I started doing SEO, you know, when did I start doing SEO? So it feels like years and years ago now. I think it was kind of back in 2007, I think it was. You know, nothing's really changed since then. It's kind of evolved and you know, over those years. But really, it's kind of the core of it is really still the same. And I've kind of kept those principles as we've kind of gone along, and it still works. So we've seen some good successes over the past few months, really, through that content optimization. And we're starting to see that shift now going back into organic search. Mm. The other thing as well that I found is, because we are living in, you know, a bit of a time where, I wouldn't say uncertainty, but obviously people's disposable income isn't as, you know, it's not there as much as it used to be, you know, because of cost of living and things like that. So what we've been sort of looking at is, how do we make our prices very competitive while obviously keep, you know, maintaining our margins, you know? And the other way of doing that is we can create some really good deals and really good enticing offers. What I've been looking at essentially is more into the affiliate channels as well. So, you know, people are looking to get incentivized for shopping more and more now, I think. So if we look at like Top Cashback, Quidco, and, you know, Easy Fundraising and things like that, you know, they're really good sources of getting, you know, plugging that gap really for sales for people who are looking for really good offers. You know, and I think that's really kind of helped us alleviate some of the loss that we've seen from referral traffic and sort of coming through affiliates now. So we've been working. Sorry, go on.
And how is affiliates working for you in that? And how are you balancing making healthy margins off the back of those things?
Well, affiliates have grown. I mean, I've kind of been manually looking after it, and I think that's the beauty of it. You can control it a lot more. You can just switch it on and off as you want to. You can say, well, I want to work with this affiliate, or I want to work with this partner, or I turn this off. So it does work quite well. You do have quite a bit of control over it. The ROI on it is pretty good, I'd say. If we look at, say, a 5% cash back on that, and if we look at kind of like the commission of 2% as well, it compared to other channels, you know, there is a cost associated with it, but it's lower than other channels overall. So it's quite good in that respect. And especially, you know, if we see the average order values kind of going up, you know, and our margins are quite good at around sort of 50%, we can kind of afford to do that, really. And so we've also been looking at those affiliates and also looking at, you know, discount for carers, blue light card, and kind of any other service workers as well that you know, can benefit from those offers. So I think that's kind of, we've definitely seen a shift in behavior where there is more people looking at affiliates and how they can be incentivized for shopping going into this year specifically.
Yeah, I suppose there's always that kind of bit of concern, isn't there, with offers and discounts, but doing it in a way, especially in the environment that we're in at the minute. I think I remember off the back of the last recession that it took a while to get customers stopping looking for discounts and not expecting discount at every kind of corner. So making sure that you're doing that in a controlled manner seems to be the very key point for you going forward.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, when we go into any time where cost of living is going up, or, you know, even looking at recessions, dare I say it, is that there's two kinds of markets that do very well during that time. And it's the high-end luxury market that would do very well, or the kind of the discount kind of, you know, low-cost markets as well. Yeah. I think in between sort of suffers. Because, you know, if people are doing those one-off purchases, they'd rather do it as, you know, a luxury item that's, you know, really good and it kind of treats themselves. And day to day, they'd want those discount and bargain offers down the line. So we're trying to make our offers as enticing as possible, really.
No, definitely. And what do you think it is, when you step back and look at the brand today, what has been the general factor behind its success? What do you think has got it to where it is today?
Well, I think, like I said, I think Skate has just been in the right place at the right time, really. It's been in a market, it's got its foot in the door in a market that was sort of growing really well anyway. And I don't think there was anything really like it in the UK before. I mean, you know, if we look at the competitors, we sort of had Halfords, who were the main players. You know, but mainly looked at sort of bikes, and they've sort of gone into scooters now as well. But for skateboards, really, it was kind of, you'd go to the brands directly. And I think Skate has provided just a kind of a one-stop shop for all the brands, you know, and, you know, all kind of, you know, skateboard types, and, you know, from longboards to cruisers. You know, and then we've got the roller skates as well, and the roller skate scene has really grown, I think, and it still is growing, even after sort of the pandemic and everything. We're seeing, you know, that quad skates and inline skates has really started to see a bit of a resurgence. And we've actually, I actually did an interview recently for the upcoming Barbie movie about inline skates, because that's apparently a big thing. So
that was
quite, I've never done that before, but I plan to see it now. Anyway, just for that.
not necessarily the brand that I would associate with the kind of skater boy in image, but yes, I can see where the quad skates back in the Barbie days, I think, are happening after the film. So yeah, I can see where that was tying in. So clearly product has been really important for your growth. You know, I remember as a child dabbling a little bit in skateboarding myself, and there was just nowhere on the high streets to buy that kind of products. And you're right, Halfords was completely trading in a different area. So how about you know, the rest of the business? Has you know, how many people work at the business, and where does marketing kind of come in? And how many people are working for you, and how is that working for the business?
Yeah, well, the marketing side of things is predominantly digital. So that's a fairly big part of it. I mean, we're primarily an e-commerce business. We do have bricks and mortar. You know, we have three stores. So we have the Hellzone store here, and then we have one at Corby and at Greystone as well. Mm. But in the office, our HQ is really in Hellzone, where all our team are. And we have, you know, I currently have a team of around 4 to 5 people in the digital team who look after, you know, the creative assets, who look after social. They also look after the SEO and the videography and photography as well. But we do have a good reliance on our merchandisers and purchasers as well, because obviously that's core. That's a key part of any e-commerce business, really. Is, and I think it's sort of one of the cornerstones, is that you need to have really good merchandising. You really need to have a good selection of products, you know. Mm. And then after that, you know, if you have that and you have the pricing structure right, then you need a really good marketing team to kind of get people to the site to see them and you know, and purchase, obviously. Then we also have, you know, a good technical team here as well. We have a good technical in-house team who look after the website, and we kind of all get together, all stakeholders of the different departments all get together and try and pull together our resources and knowledge and understand what works best. So we've been doing quite a lot of work on, you know, UX optimization, you know, and like I said, sort of A/B testing as well. So we're looking more technically at how the site works day to day for the user. And we're pulling together all of those different kind of KPIs and analytics and kind of pushing that together with the help of the merchandisers, seeing which are the best products that are performing well, and looking at, you know, with the marketing team, looking at which channels are performing really well and trying to get the best experience for our users as possible.
And how are you finding that? Are you using any particular technology to push that forward on your roadmap? Any tricks or tips there that you can share with our listeners?
Yeah, so with A/B testing, I use Google Optimize quite a lot, which I think they're actually sunsetting now, which I'm quite excited about. It's been a good tool that I've been using over the past few years, and it just allows you to take a web page, you know, and create a variant and allow you to A/B test it. You know, and you can A/B test it to different segments or personas or anything like that. And then it links directly to Google, so you can get a good understanding of how the experiment's performing. So you get a good statistical confidence rating from it. That's really helped us kind of deliver a lot of changes to the site as well, because my principle is that I don't really like going off opinion. I like going off facts and figures. So if anybody says, oh, we should do this to the website, I'm like, well, no, hold on. Let's just test it first, see what the winner is. And then we can actually, you know, we'll have the evidence to push it live. So with anything, I'm a really big advocate of A/B testing, multivariate testing. We currently use Magento, the Magento platform, and that has its own A/B testing software integrated within it as well. So we'll probably be moving over to that going forward. So that could be quite interesting as well. But it's definitely something that, you know, I've kind of developed an A/B testing roadmap that, you know, should help us deliver incremental you know, improvements to the conversion rates moving forward. So that's sort of on the kind of website side of things that we can be using in terms of technology. We've used SEMrush quite a lot for basic kind of search engine optimization, just tracking of keyword rankings as well. We've transitioned over now to GA4 as well, which is a bit of a controversial thing at the moment. I still think we're still seeing gaps in the analytics it provides. So we're just trying to alleviate that. For example, you know, what I do is I look at a lot of the day parting reports, so how the sales are doing on an hour-to-hour basis, which I sort of made a rod for my own back, because I can get a little too bogged down with the detail, and I should really probably take a bit of a step back. But GA4 at the moment, I know there are issues at the moment with the hourly reporting, so it's whether or not I just bite the bullet and just let that be, or if I find an alternative where I can actually see that in real time. Yeah, that's going to be a main challenge, I think. Well, it's a main challenge. It's going to be, you know, the Google Universal is being sunsetted in July. So I think that's going to be a main challenge for a lot of websites moving forward. And if they haven't moved over to GA4 now, then they really do need to start moving and getting that done.
Are you tired of being buried in excess inventory? Then you need Inventory Planner, the number one demand planning software for e-commerce businesses. Inventory Planner gives you real-time insights to identify slow-moving products, make informed decisions about your inventory, and free up cash flow. Right now, listeners of the Lightning 50 podcast can get a free 14-day trial of this incredible tool by heading to inventory-planner.com. Inventory Planner, never knowingly overbuy again.
That's a really good tip. And in terms of other challenges, just wider to the business, have you got any examples of challenges that you've faced and how you've overcome them over your time there?
So during my time at the moment, I feel like the cost of marketing at the moment is quite high. I think with Google Ads specifically, you know, I've seen the cost per clicks has been rising. You know, I think Google are facing its own problems, itself. So it's really, how do you find, you know, better cost saving strategies around kind of PPC at the moment? How do you get the best return on ad spend? And we've been using a lot of PMAX, so performance max ads, for a lot of our shopping as well, which we're kind of continually looking at and wondering whether or not we want to move back to the smart shopping ad format, which seemed to be a bit cheaper in terms of cost per click. So that's something that we're currently looking at. It's a big challenge at the moment. And as I've said before, you know, we do want to reduce our reliance on paid traffic, and we do want to be looking at more of the natural traffic. What my biggest challenge at the moment is getting Skate Hut to be more of a household name brand. You know, we've seen the natural growth over the past couple of years because it has been in the right place at the right time. How can I, you know, how can we get into, you know, the mindsets of people a little bit more readily? And I think that I've been looking at other channels like YouTube, for example, where we can do a bit of, brand awareness through education. Mm-hmm. And this is where my videographer, photographer, and social media manager have really been, you know, spearheading that. And we've been doing a lot of work with kind of skate crews and getting involved with communities. And, you know, the other week we went down to Wolverhampton to kind of promote the opening of a new skate park called Just Ramps. And, you know, it was getting involved with them and really helping because they do give back. And so I feel that I don't want us to be seen as, you know, just a business. I want us to be seen as, you know, we essentially a family business, and we like to help communities, and we like to help, you know, people, and we like to help even charities. You know, we've been doing a lot of work with a lot of charities like the Birmingham Children's Hospital as well. You know, so I think if we continue to get our name out there, you know, we'll see that natural growth as well. That's one of the main challenges at the moment, I feel.
That is a really, really interesting part of retail, isn't it? When you look at some of the other sports brands that have created communities, you know, you look at Nike or Sweaty Betty, those guys, like they really do kind of create like a club mentality, and then you become very aligned with that brand. So turning your company at the minute into a brand that houses all of the other brands that you're working with is probably a really clever idea to get in with a certain group or community.
Absolutely, yeah.
Fantastic. So let's talk a bit wider in e-commerce at the moment. What do you think is going to be the biggest barrier for growth for e-commerce businesses over the next 12 months?
That's a good question. I really hope we see a bit of an improvement to the cost of living. Obviously, we've kind of come out of a pandemic, and we're now seeing what's called the catch-up consumer, where behaviors are sort of changing, where, you know, they might not have been able to have the big purchases last year or the year before because of the pandemic, which now they're starting to look at. So, you know, for example, holidays and, you know, going abroad and, you know, the things that they've been putting off, they now want to purchase. So that will have a shift in their behavior. What we might see, though, is that, you know, people will be, some of those behaviors that they saw last year and the year before might continue just naturally going forward. So people might want to do staycations more than going abroad now, because they actually enjoy it and they actually might want to save a bit of money anyway. But what I feel like is that people are becoming more frugal naturally anyway because of what's happened. And I think they realize that, you know, I've developed this skill of saving money now, which is absolutely great. And I think it's really good. But I think it just means that retailers might have to work a bit harder to kind of, you know, and it might become a bit more competitive, you know, to kind of get people to purchase more. So that'll be one of the main challenges I feel.
It's a really good observation, getting people out of the kind of frugal mentality post-COVID. We're in the middle of a cost of living crisis is going to be quite a challenge for some. And talk to me a little bit about any of the other technologies wider in the business, a little bit maybe outside marketing and the e-com. The subsidiaries such as how about warehouse and fulfillment? How are you dealing with that area of the business?
Well, this is probably a good question for the operations director, but I know kind of that they're using their own systems, which we kind of expands to the rest of the company as well, like PeopleVox, and how we manage kind of the kind of internal operations through that. But you know, it's a vital tool as well. We've currently just recently moved premises as well to a 60,000 square foot warehouse with our offices on it as well. So it's been a massive upgrade for us. And obviously, you know, the whole logistics around that can seem quite daunting, but actually it's become a lot more efficient and easier in some respects as well, because we do have a wider area, but it's all contained and it's all within one place. So I think that, you know, we've got our store here as well. We've got our kind of bricks and mortar HQ store here as well. So it's all here in one place, which is really useful. But yeah, that's kind of a bit of a transition from, you know, Skate Hut being almost like an SME in some ways to now growing into a much larger company. And it's kind of reflective in the actual physical presence of it as well, really.
Yeah, it's quite the house move, that, and reflective of everything that you guys have achieved. So congratulations on that. And let's look to the future. Let's kind of like get our crystal balls out a little bit, although some of this technology you might even be using now. How about artificial intelligence? On this series of the podcast, everyone's talking about ChatGPT as well. Where do you sit with those technologies?
So I'm a massive nerd, really, when it comes down to it. And I'm really interested in the whole ChatGPT movement and Midjourney and how this will effectively, it's here to stay, essentially. I don't think, you know, it's going to go away. I think we all need to work to adapt and work with it. I think, you know, we have seen people here even, and you know, we can kind of hear the kind of murmurings through LinkedIn and things, it's very divisive opinions on it, but I feel people are coming around to it more, where initially they saw it as a bit of a threat and they were thinking, oh, it's going to take our jobs, it's going to make everybody redundant. Well, actually I think it's going to enhance people's jobs, it's going to make their output and performance a lot better. And I've certainly seen that. We've been using ChatGPT for a lot of content generation. And there was even, I went to a webinar a few weeks ago from the tech team at Wix who were talking about this. And they were saying that, you know, it is definitely something that companies have to harness, I think, to kind of stay ahead in the game, really. So, and I, you know, I've been using ChatGPT for, you know, like I said, content generation, but also for technical problem solving as well. So if I wanted to create quite a complex regular expression for Google Analytics, I've asked ChatGPT to do it, and it's done it for me in the fraction of the time it would have took me to kind of look it up online and figure it out myself. So it's really helped with kind of time management as well. And even kind of you know, data sets and pushing through, you know, a CSV file and asking it to look at, for example, my PPC campaigns to figure out which ones are performing as well and which need to improve their return on ad spend. And it's just pulled it out in a matter of seconds and said, these are what you need to be looking at. So it's great for both that technical side and the creative side as well. So I think it is expanding and it is going to grow. You know, we're seeing ChatGPT, it's expanding its functionality. It's going into, I think it's going into another iteration very soon where it's going to allow integration with APIs. It's going to allow the data and it's going to be more up to date and it's going to be allowed to kind of browse aspects of the internet, which I think is going to be a complete and utter game changer. So it's going to be really, really interesting. I think what we need to hope for is that these tools remain open source and they're not controlled by one company, essentially, because it could pose a risk to the information we're fed back, you know, where it could become biased and we could go through a whole other round of false information that we've seen previously. So I really do hope it's regulated. I hope it's kind of observed. And I think we really are in a bit of a turning point, almost like a bit of a golden age. We are looking at a bit of a golden age in AI and how it can help businesses moving forward. So I'm excited for it.
It is a really exciting time, albeit quite terrifying when you think of how intelligent this solution is right now and how, you know, 10 years ago, how our smartphones were not nearly as good as they are right now. It's it'll be incredible to see how that technology improves just in the next 6 months, 12 months.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, in the last year, I remember when I was using Disco Diffusion and there was also DALL-E as well for image, the kind of image generation AI. And even since last year, you can see the improvements made there. And, you know, you're looking at Midjourney and how that's used for image generation. There are still weird artifacts you might see in what it produces, you know, like, for example, the hands that it might create, you know, it still has difficulty with hands, but it is improving and it's getting a lot, lot better. So if you imagine, in 6 months' time, it's going to be, you know, it is going to be scary. And I think, you know, it'll be discernible from actual real images at some point. But we're also seeing that people integrating this AI, like with ChatGPT, into computer games and VR. So people could have an immersive real-time experience with NPCs and characters within the game. So make it more, you know, the dialogue in it more organic, which I think is, it's incredible. We could be seeing that the gaming industry as well is going to see a huge benefit from this with really, really immersive games and programs. So I'm excited.
That's fantastic.
Just
a little bit. So we're coming to the end of our conversation today, Richard. It's been really great conversation. But before I let you go, I need you to give me a couple of tips that you would use for someone asking you about how to grow and scale your business right now. What are the top two or three things that you would tell them?
I think, like I said before, it starts with analytics. I think you really need to look at, how the numbers are performing so you can decide what works well, what doesn't, move ahead with what works well, augment that and make it even better if you can. And just if anything doesn't work, just don't feel afraid to drop it and just feel like, no, I can't. You know, it's just a time waste. Yeah. You know, the definition of insanity is trying the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. So really, I think you need to learn how to look at the data and get the information you need out of that to make the right decisions moving forward. And I think the other side of it, you know, that you almost need kind of two sides to your brain, and that will be the logical side of your brain that you need to use. And for any marketer, the other side of the brain would be a more creative, empathetic side, to how they think. And I think with marketing, you really do need to be quite empathetic. You need to understand how the consumers and audiences think, what they're looking for. You need to read the lay of the land and understand what the market looks like, and you need to respond to it. And sometimes it just means that you have to sort of change a bit of a tack on what your brand is and what your objectives are, to see that growth going forward. And I think, there are a lot of brands and companies out there who might be second ways and be like, well, this is who we are. We're not going to change, And I think, if they're big enough, that might work. But, for SMEs, it's vitally important that they understand what their audiences are looking for and how they can adapt to that.
Richard, thank you so, so much. That was a really brilliant conversation. I feel like we learned so much from you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
So we did learn an incredible amount from Richard just then. I'm loving his excitement over ChatGPT. It's really great to hear positive conversation about the way that's going to go forward. Some tips there on building brand awareness through building communities and identifying your customers, as well as tempting back frugal customers back to spending with affiliate programs and cashback sites and things like that. And again, we always keep coming back to this analytics. Use that information to learn how you're performing and just keep making incremental improvements. Furniture Box, Natural Baby Shower, and Beyond Retail are just a few of the ambitious retailers who have integrated PeopleVox warehouse management system to take their e-commerce tech stack to the next level. With lightning-fast pick-and-pack workflows, easy user training, and a 360-degree transparency into your warehouse operation, anyone who has used PeopleVox will tell you that the platform is a genuine game-changer. Not only does PeopleVox enhance your customer experience by tightening inventory control and cutting outpacking mistakes, it also boosts your efficiency and unlocks growth for your business. So if you're ready to transform your business, head over to peoplevox.com today.